the Donnelly family company outsources to Mexico. Governor Holcomb is keeping quiet for now on health care. That plus Mike Pence and Don Jr. on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 14th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a report that Joe Donnelly's family company outsources part of its operation to a factory in Mexico.
Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly has spent years railing against companies that outsource jobs to foreign countries. It's been a major issue since he served in the U.S. House. And it's been a theme over the last year as Donnelly spoke out against Carrier, who announced it would move thousands of Indiana jobs to Mexico. But the Donnelly Family Arts and Crafts Company, which the senator worked for prior to his time in Congress, has used a Mexican factory that produces ink pads and other supplies for more than a year. The Donnelly campaign has said that Donnelly supports American companies, including his family's, and will continue to fight for the American worker.
Will this apparent hypocrisy from Donnelly have repercussions all the way into next November? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Indianapolis Business Journal Managing Editor Leslie Weidenbender, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, just how bad is this for Joe Donnelly?
I think that this is the most significantly damaging thing for Senator Donnelly, period. His vote for Obamacare is very damaging, but this is worse. I mean, this undercuts his entire image, his campaign narrative that he's built over 12 years, as the, you know, defender of labor unions and American workers, and now he's caught. And so he's financially benefiting from his family company sending jobs to Mexico after he has railed against outsourcing for years and years and years. And you can't say, I didn't know. You know, he's a significant stockholder in this company. He's making significant money. It isn't like me having 10 shares in some international company that I know nothing about. You know, he has a serious responsibility here, and there are a lot of questions raised. How long did he know before the decision actually happened and before the plant was opened? I mean, these things don't happen overnight, and the plant's been in operation for at least over a year. Yeah. So we're talking about how many years and months did he know about this? He didn't stop it. He didn't say anything. He didn't get rid of his stocks then. Today he announced, now that he's been caught, that he's going to sell his stock. Why didn't he do that when the decision was made, or why didn't he stop it? And what's he going to do with all the money that he has benefited from over these years? Is he going to donate that to someone else? Is he going to keep it? I mean, this is really significant, and I don't know how he gets out of it.
How big a black eye is this for Joe Donnelly?
Look, I think it's first important to remember that Joe has spent his entire career in Congress fighting for good-paying jobs here in Indiana, and he has fought against bad trade deals. So first, I think it's important to put that out there. Also, I think the timing of this piece is curious. On the exact same day that the Donnelly campaign was announcing record-breaking fundraising numbers for quarter two, this comes out. And I think it's important to remember that both Democrats and Republicans are focused on this race. This is a distraction. And I think the thing that we really know here is that both in Washington, Democrats and Republicans are going to be focused on this Senate race. Even if we are 14 months out, it's clear this is a top priority for both parties.
The timing doesn't matter.
I've got to address the timing issue, because I feel like that implies somehow that the reporter who was involved aimed this in order to make some...
Or if not the reporter, at least someone who may have given that reporter some information.
Maybe, but I feel like I know this reporter. It came from the Associated Press, and I just want to say that I feel like the story was fair, and I feel like it was certainly legitimate to put out at any moment.
Yeah. John, he mentioned 14 months out from an election. The fact that it's 14 months out from the election, where you haven't even got to the primary yet, and there will be a fairly significant, looks like, a fairly significant battle on the other side in the primary, How does that help Joe? How much does it help Joe Donnelly that this is so far out?
I think it doesn't hurt him in the least. I think that it's to his benefit that it's so far in advance of the election. Now, to Phil's point, this is going to be an election where there's a lot of money, and so all of these things will constantly be brought back, and so it'll be fresh, quote-unquote, again in 14 months. But I think it's interesting, because this is he got caught in a moment of hypocrisy here. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's important to remember that are we going to be conducting a traditional race, a conventional wisdom race, or is this going to be part of whatever the new politic is? Because, and I think Jennifer made great points, but you listen to people in Congress who are Republicans, and they seem to forget that the president has been engaged in all kinds of hypocrisy and lies, and they defend those things. So how will this race play? Will this race be a traditional conventional race where things like this can do a lot of harm, or will they just be part of this new era where if you just charge ahead and you ignore it and forget about it, then it doesn't do any harm?
I think the new era seems to only apply to Donald Trump.
That's a good point.
I don't think we've seen any evidence yet that it's expanded to include these other races. And I do think this could be very damaging because what John said is absolutely true. There will be so much money put into this race that this is going to come up over and over and over. I mean, you can imagine the advertising now.
Yeah.
And it is surprising that Joe Donnelly at some point didn't bring this up himself and say, I'm going to sell my stock in this company because I no longer agree with the direction that they're going. And then if it comes later, you can say that's why I did it.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the Donnelly family company's outsourcing cost Joe Donnelly the election? A, yes, B, no, or C, it is too early to tell. Last week's question, is it right for a lawmaker to run for re-election and then retire before their new term is up? 32% say yes, 68% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Governor Holcomb indicated this week he'll publicly share information on the impact to the state of federal health care reform legislation, but only when a vote in the U.S. Senate appears imminent.
Holcomb has previously evaded any commitment to releasing internal analysis of the impact federal health care legislation will have on Indiana. The governor's reasoning for not releasing those estimates remains the same. He says he wants to see a bill that remains the same for, in his words, 24 hours. Holcomb's denials include one to a request from U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly, who sought insight into the Indiana impact of the bill in his chamber. Now, though, Holcomb says he will release the requested data just ahead of any Senate vote on the health care reform bill.
Phil Johnson, is it prudent for Holcomb to wait until we get a better sense of what the actual bill is?
Prudent, I don't know. But, Brandon, I'm not holding my breath that we're going to see that report anytime soon. This bill, just like the old health care bill, we know is going to be bad for Hoosiers and it's going to cost Hoosiers. You know it's going to cost Hoosiers more in higher premiums, in out-of-pocket expenses and deductibles. We know it could cost our state a critical tool in the fight on the opioid epidemic, which we know has been a priority for many Republicans. And finally, it could cost us good-paying jobs. In a lot of rural communities, hospitals are some of the most important employers around. And if this bill goes through, if this bill passes, they might be forced to close their doors. So I'm worried about this bill. I think the governor, and don't take my word for it, I think I saw the American Medical Association came out against the bill. Hospitals are against it. Lung Association is against it. Your grandma's against it. Everyone's against it. I think this bill has done one thing very well, and that's unite people against the bill. So I'm not certain if the governor, he hasn't released the report yet. I don't know if it's politically prudent or not, but we know it's going to be bad for Hoosiers.
Does Governor Holcomb need to release this right before a vote? Should Hoosiers know how this bill is going to impact them, and do they need to hear that from the governor?
I think that the governor is taking the prudent step in waiting. I mean, this bill has changed so many times and continues to change. And so instead of having state folks run around like headless chickens with predictions and different numbers that may change hour to hour, He's waiting until we see something that might actually make it to the floor and get voted on by the Senate. And that's the point at which we can look at numbers and consider the impact. But all that being said, Governor Holcomb has been communicating about his priorities for any changes to the health care law for months and months. I mean, he has been very clear in providing direction to federal leaders that he wants to see states have more control, to have more flexibility, that he wants more funding for opioid, to fight the opioid crisis. He has been communicating on that, so it's not as if he isn't. And I think that it's the right thing to do to wait until we see something that's actually potentially going to make it through and say, okay, here's what we're looking at. But it isn't as if also in D.C. that they are operating with no numbers. They're, right. Everyone has numbers.
But should the public have those numbers?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a journalist, so of course. I think absolutely the more information that's out there, the better. But, I mean, in this particular case, we're talking about impacting hundreds of thousands of people. And I think it's incredibly important that if the governor has information about how the state could be affected, that he provide that information not just privately to lawmakers, although he has not done that with the most recent numbers, but also he needs to do that publicly. And I think that's only fair to everyone who's involved, including our federal lawmakers and to their constituents who want to be able to weigh in. The truth is, this kind of legislation is going to get tinkered with until the very last possible second. If he waits until he's sure that it's the bill that's going to be voted on, then there's zero impact at all, because that could literally be 5 minutes before the vote takes place. And so if you want to have any impact, the information has to get out sooner rather than later.
How much is politics playing into this, do you think? Because it seems from the analysis we've seen of other states, it's unlikely the report will be great news for Indiana.
Yeah. I'm going to give the governor the benefit of the doubt here and say that I don't think that the politics is his primary concern at this point. I really do think he's kind of behind the eight ball because, if this were a normal cycle, there would be a bill on the table and it would be there for 2 weeks and we could analyze that and you could take the numbers from the state and compare the two. But Leslie's absolutely right. They will be making changes, and probably not just tinkering, probably some big changes right to the very end. So he's trying to calibrate this, I think. He wants to put some reliable information out there. There may be a dose of politics in this. I can't say that there isn't necessarily. But I think it's more a case of the way this bill seems to be moving and the ability to have much time for the public to take in those numbers in a meaningful way. I would prefer that we had more time, and I would prefer that he put those numbers out there with the big caveat that says this all could change, and we'll put new numbers out then if that's the case.
Maybe even explain how they could change.
Right.
So you could, here is the impact under the bill now. However, if this proposal that's being discussed were implemented or included into the bill, then this is the impact that would have. I mean, we know what a lot of the proposals out there are.
And it's not a one-to-one comparison, but with every piece of legislation in the Indiana General Assembly, there's a fiscal analysis, and that gets updated as the bill gets changed. Not a one-to-one comparison, but that sort of thing is possible.
Bottom line, this is important. This is going to affect thousands of Hoosiers' lives. So if we have the information, more information is better, and I think it's time to see that report.
Vice President Mike Pence this week appeared to distance himself from controversy surrounding Donald Trump Jr.
Donald Trump Jr. released a batch of emails on Twitter revealing a contact and later meeting made with a Kremlin-linked Russian attorney. That contact and the meeting was supposedly about delivering to the Trump son so-called dirt on then-Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. In a statement, Vice President Pence emphasized his focus is on President Trump's agenda and noted that he's not focused on stories from the campaign, particularly in his words, quote, about the time before he joined the ticket.
John Katzenberger, are tiny cracks forming in the Pence-Trump relationship?
You know, that's an interesting thought exercise, if you will, because
that's what we do here, interesting thought exercises.
Well, that's news to me. The calculation here, or the assumption is that these things are making the governor or the vice president nervous. And we saw even before the election the revelations in the bus, and yeah. He backed off at that point and then came back around. And he's always come back around. I think that the truth is Mike Pence made his calculation. And until something bigger than what we've seen so far happens, then that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think it's kind of his role almost. His role a little bit is to be able to say, yeah, I didn't know about that. You know, I mean, I think it's almost part of the shtick is the word that comes to mind. But I really don't mean it with the negative connotation that it has. I don't think he probably did know. He didn't know. I'm sure he didn't know anything about it. Or I'm pretty sure he didn't know anything about it. And I think that's probably exactly the way they want to do it. That's the way they want it to be.
Do you think it would behoove Mike Pence for his long-term future to at some point show a little frustration with the constant, even if you decide that these aren't serious issues, even if you only view them as distractions, they are distraction after distraction after distraction from the work they're trying to do. Do you think it behooves him and his political future to at some point show a little frustration with that?
I think he's doing what he should be doing, staying above the fray on all these things. And, you know, people want to read something into that statement. They want to read what they want to see. I read it for what it is. He wasn't aware, and he's staying focused on advancing his agenda and working to accomplish what he and the president promised the American people that they do. That's what I want him to do. So I think that, you know, he just kind of continues to be disciplined and focused on the ultimate role and goal, and that's where he should be.
It's been a theme from Mike Pence throughout this entire process, going back to the campaign through to the present, that he doesn't know, wasn't aware, didn't know, wasn't aware. Do you believe him?
Ultimately, it doesn't matter. His fate is tied to Donald Trump's, and that's the calculation that he made, and that's what the future will hold. So I'm glad that this is being investigated, and I'm sure the one thing I know for certain in this whole thing is that it's far from over.
That's absolutely the case. Indiana Senate GOP leader David Long chose a familiar face to lead a new commission studying the state's alcohol laws, former Republican Senator Beverly Gard.
Republican Beverly Gard's government service hasn't ended since she left the Senate after a 24-year career. Over the last 5 years, Gard has been appointed by the governor to lead the state's Environmental Rules Board and serve on the Lobby Registration Commission. Senate President Pro Tem David Long has also tabbed her to serve on several study committees, including the recent 2-year panel on redistricting reform. Gard will now lead a new 2-year commission to examine the state's alcohol laws. That includes tackling the contentious issues of legalizing Sunday alcohol carryout and expanding cold beer sales to retailers other than liquor stores.
Leslie Weidenbetter, what do you think of Long's choice here?
Well, I think Senator Beverly Gard, former Senator Beverly Gard, is one of the toughest lawmakers I've ever known. And so I think she's a great choice. She's very well respected on both sides of the aisle. And I just feel like nobody can get away with anything with her. And when I used to be at the State House every day, you could always count on her to just cut through things and tell it like it is. So I think it's an admirable choice.
There's always a healthy bout of skepticism with any alcohol study commission because so many in the past have done nothing. Does this make you a little less skeptical about its progress?
I think that's a good point. You know, Senator Gard doesn't have to do this. She's a volunteer. And I think Leslie's absolutely right. She's got a great reputation. She takes goofiness. I was going to say something completely different. I'm glad I caught myself. And I think that, you know, she is able to analyze, and she is tough, but you look at her and you think, oh, she's a pushover. Baloney. So I think that her appointment signals that at least the leadership is serious about this, and we'll see what happens in the process.
Now, Beverly Gard in the Senate had no role in alcohol legislation, anything to know on. I don't believe she ever served on those committees, no connection to that world whatsoever, other than the fact that she occasionally voted on those bills when they came to the floor. Is that a positive or a negative in this regard?
I think that's a positive in this regard, and I think that's important. And John's right. It sounds there has been a lot of talk of this in the past, but it sounds like we're moving towards actual legislation here. So I think it's a positive for her being kind of fresh, having a fresh perspective to this.
Same sort of question.
I was going to say the same. I mean, she's very well respected. She will bring a really objective point of view, which I think is helpful, and she's done a great job on the lobby commission, which she serves on, and So I think it makes a lot of sense for a variety of reasons.
The fact that she's done so many of these former committees, I mean, it almost seems like, well, David Long just chose the same person he always chose. But does that negate from that this might have been the right choice anyway?
Oh, not at all. And I do think the fact that she has continued to serve even after retiring from the legislature means that she has remained fresh. She's still involved in the process. She still knows all the right people. And so I actually think that only makes her a better choice in many ways.
At this point, I know it's hard to tell, but this is a two-year commission with the aim to do at least some stuff, maybe even the biggest stuff, the most controversial stuff, in its first year.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, handicap it for me, do you think it'll happen?
I think it's probably even odds right now, and I know that's kind of a cop-out. But that's better than it has been before.
No
chance in hell, which is, you know, what you would be at before this. There may be a 60 or 65% chance. I do think she moves the needle on this.
I do think it depends on what you're talking about, though. Right. I mean, there's a lot involved here. It depends a lot on the question. Will some changes occur? Sure. Will we be able to buy alcohol on Sundays? I'm not sure I'd give that for sure.
Well, I think that's the one everybody really cares about at the end of the day. Governor Holcomb announced a 5-year plan to spend the money generated by the state's new road funding legislation, even as questions are asked this week about whether some of the money will be there.
Holcomb rolled out NDOT's plans to spend money generated by the new road funding plan that raised fuel taxes and created new fees at the BMV. The initial 5-year proposal includes resurfacing 10,000 miles of roadway across the state. But will all the money they're counting on be there? A provision in the legislation allows lawmakers to cancel planned shifts of the sales tax on gasoline away from roads and into other critical priorities if they experience shortfalls, including health care. Those shifts begin in 2021.
Senator Hollowell, will some of the roads money be diverted elsewhere?
Well, if so, it would be a long time away.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, the top priority is road funding. But what we're seeing here is legislative leaders, Republican, fiscally responsible legislative leaders, were putting together a long-term plan, and they wanted to build in some safeguards for unpredictable events. And, you know, there are several things that coming up, including not knowing what may happen with federal funding, reimbursement funding for health care. And so they established this fund that won't start for a few years,
right,
that will hold some money and allow for the governor and legislators to decide if it needs to go to health care or child services or education. And so we've got that kind of factor in place should we need it, which is, I think, very smart, and we'll see what happens in the next few years if it's necessary.
I think it was the inclusion of it. There's a very limited amount of things that the money could be diverted to, and education and child services are a couple of them, but those have been well-funded for a long time. Healthcare was the one, I think, that makes people raise their eyebrows, because there's general agreement, no matter what comes out of Congress, that there's going to be a little more burden at least put on the states. So because of that, do you think this was lawmakers hedging their own bets?
I think what's important to remember here, I think that likely is the case. I think it's also important to remember that lawmakers went to Hoosiers and said, we're going to raise your gas taxes to rebuild roads. We now have the third highest total gas taxes in the nation, and I think it's going to be very difficult to make that point to tell Hoosiers, well, look, we raised your gas taxes. It was supposed to be for rebuilding roads, but a small portion of it's going to something else. I think we have to make certain that we uphold that promise, and that's what Hoosiers are looking for.
I think that Phil just nailed it. I think the problem for the Republicans on this issue is that it wasn't well understood as this was going through. The message was, we're raising the tax for this, and it all makes sense. Now, it also makes sense that you keep a little back, but when you do that, then it looks like you violated your promise.
This is like all things related to transportation funding. It's just like continuing to rely on the gas tax when, in fact, cars are becoming more and more efficient, and the federal money and state gas tax money is becoming less and less reliable. Like all things related to funding our roads programs, it's not terribly reliable, and there are a lot of questions out there. And eventually the state's going to have to really think truly long-term how are we going to do this in a way that is sustainable, right, a very different sustainable way of thinking about road funding. And that's not a partisan issue. I mean, it's...
Both parties agree on that. But this
has all been transparent. I mean, this was the proposed legislation. It was on the front page of the Legislative Digest. Like, this isn't something new that someone brought about. It has been planned for, contemplated from the beginning throughout this, you know, throughout the bill passing.
Given that it'll happen so far in the future, though, by the time any... shift doesn't happen, will people have forgotten about it by then?
I think a promise is a promise, and every time that you're filling up at the pump, you're going to remember that sort of thing.
Right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Leslie Weidenbender of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
Maureen, we are done for the day. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.